And in these instances, we advise people to seek medical care quickly and not wait until somebody else has to come in and inform them that they need to do so.
COVID-19 has upset the balance of the world, and while some countries are starting to settle into a new normal, South Africa is unfortunately not there yet. You are listening to Everything You Need to Know About COVID-19 and Vaccines, sponsored by Discovery Health, where we help ordinary South Africans navigate the pandemic. Today, we are talking about effective home-based recovery from COVID-19 with Discovery Health's head of the Center for Clinical Excellence, that is Dr. Nolutando Nematswerani. A lot of us have been getting sick, and ideally we want to stay out of the hospital and keep our household safe. But barring that, we should be all aware of how best to manage COVID-19 and when we need to ask for medical attention. I am your host, Mudiwa Gavaza, a writer with the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this is a conversation that's not to be missed. Dr. Nematswerani, how are you today?
I'm very well, Mudiwa, and thank you so much for having me in your show.
Now, over 2 million South Africans have been diagnosed with COVID-19, and that number actually seems to be rising daily, especially at this particular time where we are, you know, in this wave. I think we're in the third wave at the moment, right? How does one, you know when they have COVID, and what do some of the different stages actually look like? I think we sometimes take it for granted that people actually understand how the disease actually works. So maybe you can take us through what those stages look like.
Thank you so much, Mudiwa. I think for me, maybe the first bit is around, you know, we saw the third wave. It really was a devastating wave for the Gauteng province. We saw numbers that we had never seen in the previous waves. Even though the numbers are coming down in Gauteng, we are seeing that in other provinces, the numbers are starting to pick up. We're looking at KZN, we're watching closely even the Western Cape, where the numbers are starting to pick up, even the Eastern Cape. You know, I see that the numbers are slightly higher than they have been previously. So we are not over the third wave. So I think it's important to highlight to people that we are still in the third wave of this pandemic. So people still need to look after themselves, adhere to COVID-19 regulations, make sure that they avoid mass gatherings, they socially distance, or let me rather say physically distance when they are in places where there are other people, and make sure that they continue to wear masks and cover their mouths and their noses to ensure that we kept the spread of COVID-19. But it's also important for those people who are eligible for vaccination to also go and get vaccinated so that we prevent the catastrophic outcomes that are related with COVID-19. So then coming to your point around how do people know when they are infected with COVID-19, most of the symptoms are mainly in the, we call it the respiratory system, meaning that, you know, it's your nose and eventually then it goes down to your lungs. Most people will present similar to what we usually see with conditions like influenza, common cold, where people do get a sore throat, they get a stuffy nose, runny nose, blocked nose, and then some people will develop a fever, and some people will have chills, and some people will have body aches. The other important sign will be people losing sense of taste and sense of smell, but there are some people who may not have any of the symptoms that I've mentioned, but they may present with diarrhea, vomiting, and other symptoms. So I think when a person is unwell during this time of the pandemic, we always encourage them to seek care, and then they will be guided by their healthcare professionals in terms of when a test is required. But I think for me, yes, we are still within the winter season. We are almost exiting the winter season. So people may believe that, you know, when they do have some of these symptoms, it is, you know, maybe just a cold or maybe just influenza. Because of the nature of the presentation of COVID, and also the fact that we're seeing these high numbers in terms of infections, we would like to encourage people that they don't dismiss these symptoms as just being of a cold or flu, and make sure that they get tested so that we can prevent the further spread of the infection to others. So I think that's that. And then coming into, you know, those then who have been confirmed as having COVID-19, how do we then differentiate from those who have got mild illness to those who have got severe illness requiring hospitalization. Some people will have mild illness that can be safely managed in the home environment, and some patients may have a severe illness. And the difference is that with the mild cases, it's usually early on in the disease. And then for some people, it may progress after, you know, day 5, day 7. You find that some people may then progress to having, you know, COVID complications like pneumonia. So it's important to understand that it's a spectrum from mild to severe. And for severe cases, these are cases then that require hospitalization. And patients will then present with shortness of breath. Some will have, you know, blue discoloration on the lips and the tips of their fingers because they don't have enough oxygen circulation. And some people, if they've got a monitoring device, they will see that their oxygen levels have dropped below 90%. And some patients may present also with severe chest pains. And in these instances, we advise people to seek medical care quickly and not wait until somebody else has to come and inform them that they need to do so.
Now, doctor, one of the things that does come out, earlier on you were talking about visiting a GP, having that initial visit, but what role does that initial visit actually play? Some people might not even go for that initial visit, but for those that are a bit hesitant, what is the importance of that initial visit to the GP?
Thanks, Mudiwa. We really encourage everyone who's tested positive to have some clinical oversight from a clinician, like a general practitioner. And the reason for that is because people do not know, may not be aware of deterioration. They may downplay some of the symptoms that I've just spoken about. And by the time they present in a hospital setting, they've deteriorated significantly that they now require critical care. So the role of the doctor is really to guide care and also to be able to pick up signs of deterioration and therefore, you know, refer the patient appropriately to a hospital management environment. And specifically when we think about elderly patients, we think about people with underlying chronic conditions like diabetes, hypertension. If you are pregnant and you've got cancer, you've got chronic lung disease and other chronic cardiac disease, we really encourage people to have doctor oversight so that care can be guided.
Now, for the people that are fortunate enough to not have severe symptoms and are able to wait out the storm at home, as it were, you know, how exactly can someone care for themselves? I think this is where the issue of home remedies comes in. But more importantly, what elements of care should people actually have in mind?
So just the basic things, bed rest, good nutrition, good hydration. But for people who may have mild symptoms, let's say you've got headaches, you've got body aches, you can use, you know, medications like paracetamol to manage those. We advise people to also, you know, use pulse oximeters, which are those small gadgets that you put on your finger to measure oxygen levels, because we find that these gadgets really help monitoring a deterioration. So if a person continues to monitor their oxygen levels, they can see when they're dropping, because sometimes you may not be feeling ill, but your oxygen levels continue to drop. So we're saying if you are at home, just continue to monitor those so that if you see that there is a change, you reach out to your doctor, or when the levels have dropped significantly below 90%, you can go to the nearest hospital so that you can get care. So it's really just those basics. And then doctors can also guide care, you know, in terms of prescribing some medications like multivitamin supplements to just boost your immune system. But otherwise, there isn't much more that we expect people to be using in the home environment. Most of the therapies, antibiotics, are not necessarily indicated because this is a viral infection, and therefore antibacterial medication is not necessarily indicated and unless it is prescribed by a clinician.
And for people that do unfortunately take a turn for the worse, I think earlier on you were talking about the different levels of severity that people can present when it comes to the symptoms. But if you do take that turn for the worst, when should you actually go out to seek hospital care?
So, like I said, if you've got your pulse oximeter, your oxygen levels are dropping, even if you're feeling well, you need to seek care. If you suddenly cannot breathe, you have to seek care. If you've got severe chest pains that, you know, that have just now suddenly come up, you need to seek care. If you feel that, you know, some people, you see that you've got bluish discoloration, it means your oxygen levels are low, so your bluish discoloration on the lips and also on the on your fingers, you need to seek care. Some people may present with confusion as well. Those are, you know, warning signs that the person has deteriorated and they are not having enough oxygen circulating in their bodies.
One certainly hopes that in such a situation, care can actually come in a timeous fashion. But I think one of the things that people are most concerned about at this time is reinfections, right? And at the beginning of the pandemic, there had been some thinking that if you do get infected once, you develop the antibodies and you're unlikely to get infected again, all of that. But, you know, to clear up the hearsay versus the fact, is there a possibility of getting reinfected with COVID-19? And what does Discovery Health's insights actually show in terms of the data?
So definitely there's always a risk of reinfection. And I think while it is relatively low, but we do know that for people who have previously recovered from COVID, specifically in the previous waves, there was more than 30% chance of getting reinfected at an individual risk level. With the Delta variant, we've seen that at around 26%. So I think it's important to just understand that previous infection does not protect you completely from future infections. And I think it's the same also with vaccinated people. We know that even when you are fully vaccinated, you can still get infected. The only difference is that if you are vaccinated and you get infected, the likelihood of you getting a severe illness is less. And the likelihood of dying is also significantly reduced, with 91 to about 96% protection from death. And you may present with mild illness that may not be therefore as serious enough to warrant a hospital admission or, you know, resulting in death as well.
Now, you've already touched on what is a hot button topic in South Africa and countries around the world. I don't think there's a country around the world that is not grappling with the issue of vaccinations. It is a big issue. People still deciding which side of the fence they sit on. As much as we can say that there have been big vaccination drives around the world, and you've already given us a couple of reasons that people should get vaccinated, but for those that still have a little bit of hesitation, why should someone actually get vaccinated, especially if, as you say, it doesn't guarantee that they would either not be infected or be reinfected by COVID-19?
So I think we can view this in two ways. For your own protection, vaccination will prevent severe illness and death. The main aim, we're trying to prevent people from dying and people from getting severe illness. The second piece is really for the social good. When we think about what vaccinations do, if all of us were to be vaccinated, it means our chances of getting infected, even though I said you may still get infected, the likelihood of you getting infected when vaccinated is much lower compared to people who are not vaccinated. We call these breakthrough infections, meaning that you are fully vaccinated and you still get the infection. So for me, the two reasons why you would vaccinate is for yourself, to protect yourself from dying and also from severe illness. The second piece is really around making sure that, you know, you create that barrier, which is an important protection for the broader community, because if more of us are vaccinated, fewer of us will be infected. And if fewer of us are infected, fewer of us will pass on the infection. And if fewer of us can pass the infection, there's a less likelihood of us, you know, developing or seeing some of these variants emerging as well. So if we are to really win the fight against COVID, we need to play our part and get vaccinated.
Everything that you're saying, Doctor, makes perfect sense, but there is a lot of information that is circulating out there. And for someone who does ask, how do we know that vaccines actually cause a better immune response, what would you say to them?
So, I mean, there are clinical trials that have been done. Whatever we are saying, we are basing this on a research that has been done. So, for example, the vaccines have been tested in the real world, and we know that they are at least 6 to 8 months effective against severe illness and death. So we've seen this, and we've seen in countries around the world where they have vaccinated a significant numbers in their population that they start to see a reduction in the new number of cases reported, and also very low, you know, hospitalized patients who are vaccinated, and also very few deaths in the vaccinated population. So we have seen evidence of this from global experience.
You know, one really hopes that some of that depressed infection rates do come to our shores in South Africa. I'm sure people are ready to get out at the moment. But everything you're saying ties in very well with the issue of efficacy, because there are different vaccines that are out in the market. People are often thinking about, you know, the various brands that are out there, whether you're talking Pfizer, whether you're talking Johnson & Johnson. So from everything that's there, what are the efficacy findings for the various vaccines at the moment?
So I think that that's why we need to understand exactly what we refer to as efficacy, because people look at different numbers and have different interpretations. That's why, for me, I'm saying the main aim for vaccinations is really to prevent death and to prevent severe illness. We know, for example, that for both of the vaccines that are available in South Africa, the protection against death is around 95%. So it means that if you are fully vaccinated, you are 95% protected against severe illness and death. And then the other efficacy number that we talk about, which is really against mild illness, this is now saying, if I'm fully vaccinated, my likelihood or chance of getting infected but having mild symptoms. And that number is much lower. It is around 60%, and you know, it ranges 66% for J&J. And I think, you know, you have to also look in context of the variants. So for some of the variants like Delta, you find that even with the Pfizer vaccine, that drops to the 70s. So I think for us, the biggest number that we are concerned about is really the one around protection against death and also severe illness.
Part of the trouble when it comes to getting vaccinated for some people is that there is a risk of developing COVID-19. And in some cases, some people end up having severe or critical illness. So how is it that people who are vaccinated actually develop, you know, such things? Because the thinking is that once I get this jab, despite everything you've just told us, the impression is that once I get the jab, I'm good.
I think this is very important, Mudiwa, because people get vaccinated today and they expect that tomorrow they are protected. So let me give you an example. We've got two vaccines that are currently being administered in South Africa. The Pfizer vaccine is a two-dose vaccine, meaning that you get your first jab and then 42 days later you get your second jab. So you are fully vaccinated after 2 weeks after your second jab. So that's when we say you are fully vaccinated now. You've got, you know, adequate protection, as I have just mentioned. With the J&J vaccine, it's a single-dose vaccine, so you get full protection after 28 days post your single dose. So then it makes sense that if you are vaccinated today, you are not protected 2 days later. So if you get exposed 2 days later, you can still get severe illness and you may die. But it's not because the vaccine killed you or because the vaccine doesn't work. It's just that you were not at a point where, you know, your immune system was ready. Remember, it takes about 2 weeks for your antibodies to start kicking in. So if you are vaccinated and you get exposed a day after your vaccine, or some patients we know, they get vaccinated while already infected with the COVID virus. So it's really just understanding at what stage are you vaccinating. So you get there, maybe you already were exposed and you have got the infection, and then the vaccine is not going to protect you from that illness. Or you vaccinate today and you're exposed tomorrow, within that 28 days for J&J, or between your first and your second doses when you are not fully vaccinated, it means you don't have optimal protection at that point, and therefore you can still be very ill and you may die.
Thank you so much for clarifying that for us, Doc. And as part of the thinking around vaccination, just thinking about the typical process, people tend to register online, they get their date, probably an SMS, they go to a center, they get their jab, they wait for the next one, if it's a two-dose situation, and they go and they get it. But we never really hear much about the importance of actually presenting your medical history to a GP or your doctor. You know, is there any information that one would actually need to actually take to a GP before being vaccinated?
So generally, there are very few people. In fact, there aren't many people that are not eligible for the vaccine, regardless of their underlying chronic conditions or pre-existing conditions. But before the vaccinator gives you the jab, there are a few questions that are very pertinent to this process of vaccination that they will ask you. The reason why they will not ask you for your full medical history is because, like I said, very few people will actually not be eligible for the vaccine vaccination because of their pre-existing clinical condition. But it is always important, if you're concerned about your pre-existing condition, to just get your doctor to clear you and say definitely you can go ahead. But like I said, very, very, very rare cases that, there will be a consideration maybe not to vaccinate. The majority of people with their pre-existing conditions will still qualify.
A lot of people are still yet to have been infected by COVID-19, and one hopes that they don't get infected by the virus. But for those that have been infected by COVID-19, you've just recovered. How long should someone actually wait before they get vaccinated? And I guess a follow-up question is, should someone actually wait before they get vaccinated if they have just recovered from COVID?
Yes, no, definitely. So we encourage people, once they have recovered from COVID, to wait 30 days before they can be vaccinated. So, you know, we've been getting a lot of questions, people saying, what does recovery actually mean? There isn't like a clearly defined guideline, but I'm going to try and simplify it for the listeners to say, if you had your positive test, but you didn't have any symptoms. So we usually say after 10 days, you are recovered. So we would use that as a guide to say after your 10 days, then you count your 30 days because your recovery is after 10 days. And then you say 30 days later, I can go and get vaccinated. Similarly, if you have symptoms, we say from day one of your symptoms, that's your onset of symptoms. And then after day 10, you can de-isolate. So after that, that's your recovery. And then you can count your 30 days. If you were hospitalized, we usually say you de-isolate after you have reached clinical stability, which is at a time when you no longer require oxygen if you were on oxygen. And then you can count your 10 days after that. And then after that, you can then count 30 days before you can, you know, get vaccinated. As you can see, the more severe the illness, you'll find that you reach your 30 days much longer than somebody who had just no symptoms or mild, COVID.
Thank you so much for that, Doc. And I like the fact that you did mention that there are all these questions that do come up about what does recovery actually mean. And towards the end there, you were talking about clinical stability, which means, you know, there's a myriad of information that people do need to get out there. So for someone who's been listening to this, paying attention, and they're like, yes, the doctor is actually saying things, I'm understanding what she's saying, but I want to know more. Does Discovery Health have any resources available for its clients to help them to better understand, you know, what we've actually been talking about today?
Oh, definitely. We've got our COVID Hub on the website. This is where we share a lot of the content that I've discussed today. People can go to our website and look for very specific articles that pertain to whatever question they have. You know, if there is information that is still not there, they can still reach out to us and ask their questions. So I think our Content Hub has got very good content for referencing.
So that's been us. It's been quite an interesting discussion just talking to Dr. Nema Tsorani about COVID-19. What does it actually mean? What does it entail? What are the different stages that people go through? But more importantly, once you've presented symptoms or once you've tested positive, what steps can you actually take care of yourself at home if you find yourself having mild or little symptoms? And at what point do you need to go and actually seek hospital care if you do turn for the worse? But more importantly, it was really great getting an understanding of what the vaccine actually does, what the vaccine does not do, and what the data is actually telling us about the effectiveness of the vaccine and the different stages at which people have their antibodies actually kicking in. But also the big message it sounded from Doctor was to say that the big reason people get vaccinated is to reduce the chance of severe illness and death. That's the first one. And then the second second one should be as a protective layer for passing on infection to other people. So thank you so much to Dr. Nematsurani for your time, and thank you to everyone who's been paying attention and tuning into this Discovery podcast, just around everything you need to know about COVID-19 and vaccines, where we were talking about effective home-based recovery from COVID-19. Make sure you tune into our next episode as we continue this important discussion. You can find our latest podcast and episodes on iono.fm, Spotify, Google Podcasts. Choose to get your pods casted. These episodes are also published on Times Live and Business Day. Please subscribe for future episodes and ensure you don't miss out. I've been your host, Mudiwa Gavaza. Stay safe, stay healthy, and join us next time on this podcast around everything you need to know about COVID-19 and vaccines.